The Rouge Rugby wishes to extend our condolences to the family and friends of George Nicholson, the former chair of Rugby Americas North. Nicholson did great work for rugby both across North America and for Barbados as both player and president of the union. He shall be missed. Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Rouge Rugby Podcast, where we talk about real Canadian rugby. I'm Stu Hartley, joined as always by Derek Brissett. Derek, there's been a lot of rugby going on as usual, and you know, we're very grateful for it. We've had, we're now into like the final few rounds of European rugby. We're into the business end of the Premiership, the URC. I'd say the top 14, but the top 14 goes a little bit longer. And we're vastly approaching the midway point of MLR 2024. What games have really stood out for you recently?
Yeah, I mean, I think like over the past 2 weeks since we last chatted, like the Chicago Hounds have looked very good over their past two games. Mm-hmm. They've definitely shaken up the Eastern Conference right now. You know, still waiting for the Free Jacks to be bad, like everybody, and they are. Yeah, they're still, you know, top of the East with a game in hand still, guys. It's not... Well,
even if they do go and do the double this year, there will be a cup that they will be without, and that is, of course, the esteemed Coffee Cup between New England and Seattle. They lost that this year, and they lost that at home. This is interesting because this is their second loss this season, and both have been at home. So, you know, great away, but I'm guessing those home fans are a bit annoyed that the Veterans Memorial Stadium in Quincy is no longer the fortress that it once was.
Yeah, I mean, you know, MLR, the Shield's in San Diego, though, so it's not at home. So I don't know if they got much to worry about.
Yeah, well, we'll see how it goes on. And obviously, if the like you mentioned, that the Shield will be contested in San Diego at Snapdragon Stadium at the conclusion of this season, whether it stays there, whether it returns to Quincy, we have yet to see. But, you know, if it's going as it currently is going, then New England still looking as the team to beat, in the East at least. But, yeah, you know, enough talk about Canada South. Let's talk about Rugby Canada as a whole, because there's been a bit of news that's come out over the past few days that we need to talk about. The most recent news, including the new elections for the chair of Rugby Canada. So it was announced earlier today that Kathleen McGinn will assume the position of chair once Sally Dennis has completed her second term. Sally Dennis has been in the role, I believe, since 2015. No, sorry, 2017. That's how inaccurate I am. And, you know, this announcement came through the AGM, which was held digitally on Friday, April 12th. And the press release says that Sally Dennis became the first woman to hold the office of chair in Rugby Canada's history. She skillfully stewarded the organization out of the pandemic and into a new era for rugby in Canada. Her work ethic, professionalism, and leadership were cornerstones of the organization's rebuilding as she set the bar high and challenged everyone to achieve it. And, you know, that is pretty fair to assess Dennis's position of chair since 2017. You know, we've obviously had the disappointments of the men's failure to qualify for the Rugby World Cup, the high performance review that brought everything to the surface. But I think we can reasonably say that things are looking to improve. You know, we have three men's test matches on Canadian soil this year. The WXV1 is coming to Canada this autumn, and you know, more opportunities are growing. We have the strategic plan from Rugby Canada as well, looking at the next cycle of the World Cup and what their goals are, and you know, whether they achieve them or not is to be seen, but you know, we have that laid out in front of us. And, you know, I think credit has to be given to Sally Dennis for being able to hold it, especially as it mentions, during the COVID-19 pandemic as well, which is, nothing to be envious of at all. And thank you, Sally, for everything you've done. Congratulations to Kathleen again on being elected to chair. Also mentioned that Tara Erskine and Sean Hofstetter have also joined the boards as directors on 3-year terms. And David Fortier and Karen Paquin were re-elected for their second terms. So we have the board of directors for 24-25, as Kathleen McGinn as chair, Steve Swaffield as the vice chair, Sandy Donald as secretary, Jim Logan as treasurer, and then Lauren Woolman, Karen Paquin, David Fortier, Jeb Sinclair, Sean Hofstetter, and Tara Erskine as directors. So congratulations to everyone.
Obviously, some big moves being made by Rugby Canada. I mean, like Kathleen McGinn, I think she joined the board in like 2002, right? So she's been there for a little bit. You kind of mentioned Dennis has been around since 2017, which hasn't necessarily been the greatest stretch of time for Rugby Canada, right? So it's like, I think my thoughts on this are kind of the same as thoughts I've shared on the podcast earlier in regards to like the coaching staffs and stuff, is you need new people to come in and do things, right? Kathleen McGinn isn't entirely new, I guess. She's been here for like 2 years, right? You got a couple new board members though, a couple that are coming back. It seems like a little bit of a mix, but like I think that's still kind of like, when I'm looking at this from an outside perspective, and yeah, I will completely agree with you that like from a business point of view, it's like, getting some of these test matches is really nice. Getting WXV being hosted in Canada as what World Rugby is now positioning as like the premier like women's tournament that's not the World Cup, right? So it's like getting that hosted in Canada, it's like that stuff's really well done. The Seven series cut a whole bunch of tours, but we were able to keep the Vancouver stop, right? So like there's definitely like there's some positive things that have ha certainly happened there, but I still think like for the overall success of Rugby Canada, it's still to me like new faces, new voices, new thoughts, new opinions all need to kind of be brought in. It kind of seems like they half did it with the board. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's not that I have like an inherent problem with necessarily anybody that is on the board. Because quite frankly, I think like probably maybe most fans, it's not really like we actually really know exactly what they do. But it's, I don't know, to me, it's just like you need some new people in there. So they did manage to get a new people, some new people, and they shuffled some other positions around. So it does have a bit of a new look. So for that, I'm happy. But it's still something that I think I see with Rugby Canada, where it's like we really want them to, make some big cultural changes. But I don't like where it still seems like there's maybe a little bit too much reliance on the people that are already part of Rugby Canada to be doing that. Maybe it's just a negative view of the thing, but like,
I can understand. I can also see like the counter argument of that is that you want to have someone with enough experience within the organization to know how it's run without completely throwing out the baby with the bathwater, if that makes sense. So I
no.
get now, and as you mentioned, McGinn has
She's
only
only been here for
been
like 2 years,
two,
for like
she's
a
been
year
in
and
2 years. However, her credentials include being the chair of Rugby Ontario, and she's been a key contributor since 2017 and was the chair of Rugby Ontario from 2019 till February 1st of 2022. So, she's been a chair previously and she has contributed to numerous projects. She was responsible for the hiring of Rugby Ontario's CEO, Miles Spencer, and she showed her leadership through the COVID-19 pandemic as well. as well as steering Rugby Ontario's latest strategic planning process on top of that. So
She did a lot of good stuff for Rugby Ontario, as you just
yeah,
mentioned.
so
Hopefully
there's the hope that there's a
that translates
continuation.
into Rugby Canada.
Exactly. So again, congratulations to McGinn on being elected to chair of Rugby Canada. Now there was some mention of those that are no longer with us in the in memoriam section. That includes Pat Aldous, the former national team player, board member, chair, COC representative, and board member for the Canada Sevens tournament, as well as our friend Bill Webb, the Rugby Canada director and the Toronto RFC. And Bill was also the recipient of the Chair's Award listed here for his great, extraordinary contributions to rugby in Canada. As a player, coach, builder, innovator, investor, advocate, and donor, incredibly generous with his kindness and support, Bill was a giant in Canada's rugby community and is greatly missed, which is 100% accurate. And
Yeah, that's probably the easiest chair award Rugby Canada has had to give out in quite some time. Yeah, like it's you know, obviously, his passing is still like it's still pretty fresh for a lot of people. It's still obviously sad, but I think like as we talked about the last episode, how like even though the Arrows aren't around anymore, there's still like parts of that legacy of the club are still lingering around in the way of former players coaching clubs or university teams. And there's even been more announcements of that. There's a lot of Arrows going to MAC. It looks like MAC's gonna have like I'm trying to think of it off the top of my head, but MAC might have an all Arrows coaching staff right now. But it's so there's a lot of Arrows down there. I think Shepherd Kelly and Brown are down there. Or whatever. I'm trying to. I should have looked that up. But either way, there's a lot going there. But so it's like you feel that legacy. There's obviously, the academy is still continuing. We talked about their schedule last episode as well, right? So it's like you can really kind of see the legacy of the work that Bill Webb did. Still kind of carrying on. He's probably, this probably isn't going to be the first, posthumous award recognition that he's going to get. And probably get a couple like awards named after him and stuff too, right? So it's kind of the impact that he had. So definitely not surprised to see that he's been awarded the Chair's Award, because yeah, it's still tough to actually measure like what he actually accomplished in Canadian rugby.
Okay, moving on. And we have had the announcement for the traveling roster for the upcoming Pacific Four series in 2024. And with the first game taking place this coming weekend, that will be the USA versus Canada. So good to know who will be on that traveling roster. There's already been a training program with both the women's 15s and 7s teams, although considering how many players play for both, it's pretty fluid, I'm gonna go ahead and say. So we have 30 players traveling, and we have a list of non-traveling reserves. Non-traveling reserves include people like Ashlyn Smith, Demi Swan, Emma Taylor, Magalie Harvey, and Taylor Perry. And then we have the actual list of the squad, and a lot of familiar names. Of course, we have players like Sophie Dugoody, Sabrina Poulon, and of course Tyson Bookaboom. Now, Tyson Bookaboom is currently on 65 caps for Canada, and if she plays in two games, she will match Gillian Florence on 67 caps. And if she plays in three and gets 68, she will become the most capped women's rugby player in Canadian history.
I feel
So,
like that's gonna happen. I mean, barring injury. But I feel
yes,
like,
obviously,
yeah.
hopefully not,
But
but.
like, yeah, exactly. But I mean, I don't see why Bookaboom would come out of the lineup in any of these games, really. Kind of. It's a cool tournament, but it's also kind of a weird tournament because you obviously have Canada versus USA in LA this weekend, and then a few weeks off before flying to Australia and New for in order to fly to Australia and New Zealand for the final two games against those countries, right? So
Yeah.
it's a bit of a weird kind of tournament, but it's a pretty stacked team Canada, like even to the extent that the non-traveling reserve roster is actually really good. Like you could make a pretty solid starting 15 out of the non-traveling reserves. And but yeah, like a lot of sevens players. So obviously people have been playing recently. There's a lot of English Premiership players on the squad too, which maybe kind of stinks for some of the English Premiership fans that this is kind of conflicting with their playoffs and their business end of the season, as you were talking about earlier in the show. But it's I mean, no real surprises on the roster, but it's solid, man. And looking forward to a Pacific Four series kicking off this weekend.
Yeah, there is a break between the first round for Canada and the second, and in that time is going to be the Singapore Sevens. As I
Nobody on
mentioned,
this roster better go to that tournament.
no, they should, but only in the stands, only supporting the players in the sevens
Yeah.
themselves.
No one. Yeah, no one go. Nobody should go to that. That's on this roster.
Obviously, Canada are in a secure position that they should be in the non-playoff round in Madrid, and when it's all going on. So, yeah, I think we're okay not to have any of the 15s players playing in Singapore, but. Yeah, because I think Canada currently plays fifth. They're on 72 points, and there's a maximum of 20 available. Brazil, who are the top of the bottom, are in 30 have only 31 points. So yeah, Canada are definitely in the clear. So, Madrid, that's a different conversation. Singapore, take it easy. Let some of the young sevens players that want to get the experience have that tournament. Then you can get back. For Madrid, but obviously I know the big focus is going to be on Paris. And speaking of Paris, we will be talking about certain sevens team later. But we are going to move from the women's team to the men's because there has been the announcement of tickets available for the men's 15s fixtures this summer. So those tickets include the game against Scotland and the following game against Romania. They are currently available through Ticketmaster. Tickets start at $30 plus taxes and fees. With options including four levels of reserve seating, as well as a standing general admission and club seating. And those tickets are available from Thursday, April the 25th at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern. So by the time you're listening to this podcast, those tickets are available. So this is your reminder, go get those tickets now, and let's have a proper Canadian outing for that game. Now we go from the national team to one of the provincial unions, specifically Saskatchewan, because Sask Rugby have released their strategic plan for 2024 to 29. Now, this plan is focusing on three areas. They have athletic development, capacity for sport, and sport in community. They have listed their expected outcomes for each of these, and they also include the major initiatives. So the expected outcomes is what they expect to achieve, with the major initiatives being projects or initiatives they will execute to achieve them. So, for example, athletic development, their expected outcomes are to enhance and communicate athlete recruitment and development programs, initiatives, and resources, as well as clarify roles and strengthen relationships to support athlete development. And their initiatives include defining the athlete participation opportunities, enhancing and implementing the long-term athlete development framework, and establishing an annual competition and events calendar. So, you can find this on Sask Rugby website, and it is a PDF. It is only 4 pages long, but includes their vision,
One
their
page
mission.
is just pictures, though, and one
I
page is
know,
the
but
title page.
sometimes
It's 2 pages.
you gotta visualize what you want to achieve. And they talk about their vision, their mission, their values, as well as their strategic plan. Something I have noticed, Derek, with both this and the national strategic plan is that it is now being done to 2029. So it appears as though the strategic plans are now following the women's calendar for rugby. Now, obviously, there's the new investment that is going into women's rugby. Obviously, we've seen with WXV, the Women's Rugby World Cup as well, and that expansion that is going to take place in 2025. But of course, 2029, the World Cup will go to Australia. And yeah, it seems to be an interesting shift that Canadian rugby is moving to follow the women's calendar instead.
Yeah, that is interesting. Like obviously, we talked about it way back when it was initially released, but like they were talking about building those high performance centers, and it sounded very like to cater to developing women's national team. It seems like there's maybe some recognition from maybe following the last Women's World Cup where, they had that epic game against England that England literally needed like a try of the year to actually beat Canada in it. And Sophie de Goody came on, did her press conferences after and was talking about having more games, more resources, thinking about like what the team could achieve if they were, all the players were able to be like full-time players, et cetera, right? Stuff we brought up and talked about constantly on the podcast. It kind of seems like Rugby Canada, and maybe even like if you are gonna, maybe jump to that conclusion that they are focusing on the women's calendar, I think is maybe recognizing that like, the women's rugby team maybe can do something like in reflection of like what Christine Sinclair has done for women's soccer in Canada, right? Where it's like you have a chance for the women's team is actually the one that's in position to maybe win a World Cup, maybe win Olympic medals, maybe win, WXV, win major tournaments, right? That through the women's team, maybe that can help grow the game, of rugby within Canada, on the backs of perhaps a successful women's team, right? And I think like right now I think in the last, like the last year specifically, within North America, I think has seen like a really great surge in the coverage and general popularity of women's sports, right? Like you have, in Canada, the PWHL finally
Oh, yeah.
got a, we got a professional women's hockey league finally that actually has the best players in the world in the league. Right. The games have been great. It is damn near impossible to get a ticket for a PWHL Toronto game. I don't really, I don't know what it's like in other cities, but it's like damn near impossible in Toronto right now. Like it's,
Well, seeing as they recently broke the attendance record in Montreal, I'm guessing it's pretty tough to get it in Montreal as
in
well.
Montreal too. Yeah. Well, yeah, this is that Montreal game though was at the Bell Centre, right? Which is the biggest hockey arena in North America, as far as I know. It's the biggest arena in the NHL. So, right, and like, so it's obviously, but I mean that does speak to it. Like they've sold out the Bell Centre, they sold out Scotiabank Arena. I think they sold out. Where do the Penguins play? PPG Paints Arena or something? I think they sold that one out too.
Well, they've been selling out all their
Everywhere, yeah,
games
everywhere, yeah.
recently,
So
so.
ultimately unreal for the PWHL and women's sports, but also like we obviously had like March Madness, the NCAA, right? Caitlin Clark and Iowa like legitimately made that the women's March Madness tournament was a bigger deal than the men's March Madness tournament this year, right? Which is awesome, right? Like and it goes to show for like from that perspective, it does go to show you the like absolute power that a superstar talent such as Caitlin Clark can have for the marketing of any league, right? And I think, I don't know, like it seems like it's a good time to capitalize on the fact that women's sports in general seems like it's having a pretty big boom right now,
Yeah.
which is great to see. And also the Canadian, like the women's national team is amazing, right?
Yeah.
And like, you know, we've touched on a lot of the players. They're amazing. And like the team's amazing, and they have arguably the best player in the world, right?
Something interesting that someone pointed out about Caitlin Clark is that a bunch of idiots went to a game and were like taunting her, but they were calling her overrated. And someone pointed out that this marks a turning point in how certain individuals view women's sports, because the standard response has been to call like you sexist insults, you know, like get back in the kitchen or something like that. Now they are saying that her talent
Or
shouldn't be
insulting her.
recognized instead of because of her gender.
But you
And it's like it's a
know,
weird thing to fixate on, but it's very interesting in
it is.
understanding it.
It is. And it's like, you know, like, I mean, I think for one, like pro athletes being, you know, going to like an away team venue and being chirped by fans is going to be part of pro athletes. It's great that they're talking about her. They're ch two things is like it is. It's probably a good thing that they're chirping her basketball talent or
Yeah.
whatever, calling her overrated. Because like honestly, like if you're an opposing team's fan, yeah, you're going to call the best player on the other team overrated. That maybe makes sense,
Yeah.
right? So it's good that they're calling her overrated and, as you said, not something sexist. But also the other good thing is, in order to do that in a place that Caitlin Clark might hear it, you bought tickets to watch her play. So like that's
Yeah.
also a good thing, right? It's like, yeah, if you're buying tickets to watch them play, and then so I think that's also a good thing. The other thing I was going to mention too is like there was like talk of you know, a couple news articles, news stories came out about you know, some groups trying to start a professional women's rugby league in the USA
Yes,
over the
that
past
is
couple over the past 2 weeks or since we last recorded, right? So
yeah.
it's like, I think it's maybe a good thing that you can kind of like build, Rugby Canada can build on, you know, the women's team popularity, the success of the women's team to help grow the sport, right? And then, you know, if that professional women's rugby league does end up becoming a reality, right, that can boost the profile of the game. And also to be like, much like the same way we've been talking about how like MLR shows that, you know, rugby can be a pathway to like a career in like professional sport, right? It's like you can get all the women's players in Canada looking at you know, a potential pathway to play professional rugby that doesn't necessarily have to involve going to England or to the US or to like, you know, New Zealand, Australia,
France, yeah.
France. Yeah. All these other countries that do have that league. The other thing, though, too, is if you do have a professional women's rugby league in North America, there's a legit potential that that could be the best league in the world if you get
Oh,
the money
yeah.
to do it, right? Because, like, unlike in the men's game, Canada's ranked fourth in the world. And what's USA, like sixth, seventh, something like that, right?
Yeah, something in
Yeah,
along those
something like
lines.
that, right? So it's like you have like two top 10 countries in the world. There's unreal players on both sides, right? And like you can make that league and then have like, you know, a player like Sophie DeGoody come over and play in that league, and she can be the best player in the league and also be Canadian and playing for the Canadian national team, right? And it's same with all the American players, right? All the American players can be the best player, can be like top, you know, not the best player because Sophie DeGoody's in the league,
Yeah.
but they could be like top five, top 10 players in the league too, and they're American and they could be representing their hometown teams and stuff. But also, if there's enough money, maybe you can draw in like the players that play for like the Red Roses or the Black Ferns, et cetera, right? If there's enough money behind it, because all those women's pro leagues are relatively new too, right? So you could leverage that, and maybe like you have like that league would probably have a pretty good chance, if they have the resources to make it happen, to actually be the best league in the world, because you're going to be able to draw from teams that Canada's top, Canada's top four, and USA is, probably like a cup, like a win or two away from being a top five country based on the world ranking points, right? So you have two, potentially two top five countries creating the base of the player pool for a North American league, right? Which is a little bit of a different setup than MLR. But if that happens, women's sports, it seems like it's in a very good spot right now, right? So, is this what Rugby Canada is doing? I don't know. I think to circle all the way back, it's a bit of, I guess it does line up with the Women's World Cup calendar and everything, but it's if that's how it's going to be now, it's like that's not too bad. I mean, I think even soccer in Canada really did grow based on the success of Christine Sinclair, who's probably the most famous player in Canada and still, right? As far as a Canadian soccer player goes, maybe Alphonso Davies is the only player on the men's team that I think would even be in that conversation to be more popular than Christine Sinclair, but you can see the popularity in which she did for that sport in Canada, and the success and the popularity of soccer has risen because of the women's team, or a large part because of the women's team, right? So, if rugby can kind of do a similar thing, like I don't like I think that's a good thing, and they should maybe go for it and leverage that.
So what I've just been searching for in the background is name of this new competition. That is Women's Elite Rugby. It's looking to establish itself in 2025 ahead of the US World Cup. So obviously we know that the Women's World Cup is coming to America in 2033. So that gives them 8 years to build up their repertoire and portfolio. But yeah, they currently have a website, womenseliterugby.us, but they also have presence on social media, including Twitter, where they talk about Women's Elite Rugby, the first professional women's rugby league in America. Now, it is a league, but rugby league is not the same as rugby union. So I always use rugby competition just to avoid any doubt of what it's going to be.
They're definitely using league in the same way that Major League Rugby uses. Honestly, rugby league is a terrible name for a sport because of the word league. And a rugby league competition is a rugby league. Like it's not the best name, for this. I don't know why it's called, why is it called rugby league?
Oh, it's a long history lesson between
Yeah, but
North
why
and
did they
Southern
settle
England.
on league? Like, I understand that they hated union, but why did they settle on league? And then why is the sport just called league? Like the league. Like the NRL is a league. Like, you know what I mean? Like National Rugby League is just that's just the name of the it's a national name of the sport. Be like the National Hockey, and then that's the end of the sentence.
You know what? Bring it
Still
up with take
football.
it up with the Wolfpack, and I'll be glad to explain it to you.
I miss the Wolfpack. I miss pro rugby in Toronto now.
Same. Let us move on. As we mentioned before, talking about the Olympics, it has been announced today as well. The pools for the final qualification in the Olympic Sevens. And Canada is in a pool that includes China, Uganda, and Great Britain. Now, we know that it is essentially a winner takes all approach that is going to get you that spot. If Canada were to lose one game, it could possibly be against Great Britain. If the format is anything like it has been for the Sevens series, it is going to be the top two teams of each pool going through, and then the two highest third place finishers to make up that quarterfinal round. But again, it is just going to be winner takes all for this one. So Canada need to basically pull their finger out or pull off a miracle if they want to be the final men's team making it to Paris.
I mean, yeah. I think the important thing to remember going into this tournament, though, is like Great Britain and the Springboks also lost. Like, that's why they're here. because they also like they're beatable teams. Clearly, they're in the repêchage tournament somehow. Like Kenya beat the Blitzbox. Like
It's
you
so
can do it.
weird to
You
say
can.
that out loud.
Yeah, exactly. It is still weird, but it's like, and that's not like disrespectful to Kenya. Kenya is a good team, but it's like
Well,
that's why
exactly. They
they're
beat the
here.
Blitzbox.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's why they're here. Like Kenya beat them, right? And it's like Canada has beaten Kenya at points in their history. Like it, and Kenya is a good sevens nation, right? But like that's why these teams are here. Like Great Britain is here because they lost. Right? Like they're not unbeatable, like clearly, because they're in the same tournament as you. Like I think go if you're looking at it from the Canadian outlook, you like there's you have to beat China, like no
Absolutely.
question. You have to beat China, you have to beat Uganda, right? And then you're gonna put your best effort forward to Great Britain, but hopefully that'll be good enough. But hopefully like beating China and Uganda will be good enough to at least get you into like the knockout stage of this. And then once it's knockout stage,
You gotta
sevens
go
is a
distance.
crazy sport.
Yeah, anything can happen.
Hence why this Blitzbox and Great Britain are in this tournament too. It all kind of comes back to that. One game is 14 minutes long. There's a lot of chaos that can happen in 14 minutes and not a lot of time to actually recover from any mistakes in those 14 minutes. Right. So it's I think that's just kind of the mentality that you have to have is like a team like Great Britain in your pool, like they're here because they lost too. Like they're a beatable squad, right? And ultimately it's gonna come like in a one game scenario, anything can happen in one game, right? Like we've seen it in literally every single sport that has single elimination knockouts. All it takes is one guy having a bad day, or a great day, and you get some unexpected results. That's what makes the sport so exciting. It's kind of fun to have the Blitzbox in Great Britain in the repêchage tournament because it adds a little bit of chaos to it. But yeah, it's gonna be a big weekend though.
And that weekend will be on June 21st to 23rd at the Stade Louis II in Monaco. And we're gonna bring it back to Canada because the Vancouver Highlanders, they're still going. When they're not looking for new volunteers to help out or awarding High School Rugby Player of the Week, they are announcing additions to their squads. And so for the main squad, they've added Nico Leonard. And to the reserve squad, they have added Sean Griffiths and Ed Wallen. So I think Nico is listed as number 22, but of course, Paul Cellini is no longer with the team. And they said they're going to add 25. Does this mean, do you think they'll bump that up to 26, or do you think they'll take someone from the reserve squad and make them into the main
That's
squad?
probably a better question to ask Curry Hitchborn.
That
I
is.
guess if they want a 25-man roster and Paul Cellini is unavailable, I would assume they're going to add a 25th guy, whether that comes from the reserve squad or maybe they already worked out who that player is going to be. And maybe it's a reserve squad player that hasn't been announced yet, so they're just going to announce them as part of the Highlanders' main squad anyways, right? But I would imagine the roster is still going to be 25 guys. But I guess like the interesting thing is going to be though, because Paul Cellini left because of a job opportunity, which seems to be what the Highlanders are trying to do, right? So like obviously that's a good thing for the Highlanders because it's like it. I guess it kind of shows that their philosophy and what they're trying to do is working early on, but. I think that'll be an interesting thing with the team though, is if that happens to other guys while they're like mid-season, right? If something comes up that is like, oh, hey, I just got promoted at work, it's more responsibility, more time, etc. I can't play in this game or whatever. I think like, which I mean I suppose could happen or something, but like yeah, I don't know. I guess it's It might just be, part of what the Vancouver Highlanders are going to have to work around based on what they are actually trying to do, which is, give guys a way to play high level elite rugby while, pursuing their, careers in whichever, professional fields they may be targeting or looking at to develop those careers in, right? So, it's probably why there is a reserve squad, right? So you can
Yeah.
stuff like that. I don't know.
Makes
I'm
sense.
that's just pure
Well,
speculation though.
yeah,
Again,
I'm sure we'll
better
find out.
question
It's
for
in
Curry
the.
Hitchborn, I think, man.
Yeah,
I know you know
absolutely.
how to contact him, so.
I know that as well. But if you are looking to watch any rugby this coming weekend, the Women's Six Nations concludes, and that is available on DAZN. The Pacific Four Series hasn't announced where you can watch the games at the time of recording, but if we're going off the past few years, it's more than likely TSN or the TSN Plus app.
Or
And
it'll
if
be
you want,
something completely random.
oh, like rugbypass.tv or
Or
something. Well, I was
something
like,
even more random than that.
yeah, well,
The
fine. If
Spanish
as soon as we
Union
find
website.
out, we will put it on our socials so you can keep up to date on that. And if you want to watch any MLR games, you can do so for free on the Rugby Network. Now, this coming weekend, we should have another round of the Premiership and URC, which is available on Sportsnet. And the week after that, I believe we have the what's now the semi-finals, I believe, of the Champions and Challenge Cup. That should be available on epcrugby.tv. Now, if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to check out more, as well as our written pieces on our website, therougerugby.ca. You'll also find a podcast on Spotify, S4P, and Apple Podcasts. You also have a YouTube channel at The Rouge Rugby with episodes of podcasts, as well as extra interviews with players and coaches. Make sure to like and subscribe and hit the bell notification to stay up to date with all our videos. We're also available across social media, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Threads, all at The Rouge Rugby. Derek, where can people find you on social media?
I preset the jet across all social media networks.
And you can find me across social media at Hardman, spelled HRDMAN. Well, that's where we're going to end this episode. Derek, thank you again for joining me, and thank you all for joining us for another episode of the Rouge Rugby Podcast, where we talk about real Canadian rugby. We hope you can join us again next time.